Okay, so we're just saying that PID controllers are perhaps the most ubiquitous continuous control system in industry. I think there might be one that is more common. Any ideas what that might be? In practice. There's one in this room, actually. Maybe two in this room, actually. No ideas?
Thermostat.
Yeah. So kind of on-off type controllers, thermostat being the most ubiquitous, right? So a thermostat is just turning something on or off based on like an if-then condition, basically, right? So a light switch, I'm going to say, is open loop control because the switch doesn't know anything about whether the lights are on or not. So the thermostat, but if we do have, looks like actually this room doesn't have the automated switches, but like the motion sensitive light switches that are in a lot of our rooms are a feedback control system. They're looking for motion, and if we have motion, turn lights on. So I think a thermostat, that's a feedback control system. It's measuring something about the environment and acting accordingly. It just happens to only have two states, either off or on. So if we get beyond just that kind of on-off control, then I think PID is the most common. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the PID controller. We touched on it a little bit back on the very first day of class. So we'll hopefully kind of loop back through and tie back to that with what we've learned since then. All right. So a PID controller is really just trying to choose some input to my plant based on an error signal. So based on the error from what I'm measuring. So if we have a block diagram that looks like this, plus, minus, reference, output Y, where the thing we're trying to control is GP, the plant, and the controller we get to choose is this GC. And what it's doing is acting on the error to pick the input to the plant. Right, so the input to our plant, the thing we're trying to control, is the output of the PID controller. And let's first write it in the time domain because I think it's easier to see where the name comes from in the time domain. So we look at this U as a function of time. We're going to have some term that's just proportional to the error. Okay. We're going to have some term is proportional to the integral of the error over time. You could probably guess which one that is. And we're going to have some term that's proportional to the rate of change of the error. Okay. So we have some term that's proportional to the error itself. That KP is called the proportional gain. And that term in general is the proportional term or the P part of our PID controller. Okay. KI is the integral gain, and then that entire term is the integral term or the I part of our controller, our PID controller. KD, as you might expect, is the derivative gain, and that is the derivative term, or the D part of our PID controller. So we write out in time domain, this is the form we have for a PID controller. All right. What does that look like in the Laplace domain? If I want to write S times that, there's some S's in there, yeah?
I had a
Mm-hmm. And an S times your derivative.
Mm-hmm. What's this guy? So we end up with something that looks like this. That's the kind of one form, and you'll see what gets written in a few different ways of a PID controller in the Laplace domain. Okay. I want to make this point explicit that you don't actually need all three terms, and quite often you don't have all three terms. So in For example, a lot of process control, you end up with just a proportional integral. So if you have a you hear that as a just a PI controller, right? So KD is 0. You might also have a proportional derivative controller. Or a PD controller, no I term. That's actually the one we looked at on the first day of class, PD controller. Okay. So you have a PID and then kind of subsets, and of course you could just have proportional control as well. And depending on what GP is, sometimes that's enough. Okay. You guys with me so far? All right, so let's take this guy. I'm going to rewrite him this way. So basically just kind of collected all those terms together. So what do we notice right away? What does this PID controller do for our pole zero map?
You have one pole.
And have one pole. Yep, so it's not just at zero, it's actually at the origin of that pole zero map. What else does it do? Adds a pole, and what else?
Zero, or adds one zero.
How many zeros?
Two
zeros. What controls where those zeros are end up being placed on that pole zero map? Yeah, the gains I get to choose. Right. So we had PID controller adds two zeros and one pole. The pole's always at the origin. To our pole zero map of our general transfer function. If you're looking at just GP. All right. So just looking at that, which of these really allows me kind of some freedom in the control. Right? It's where I place those zeros at. Right? And kind of using some of our root locus knowledge, hopefully, what effect on the closed loop poles do those zeros have? Closed loop poles move
from your poles to zero.
Open loop poles towards open loop zeros. These would be two open loop zeros. Right. So by placing those zeros, I'm able to control how the closed loop poles move as I increase gain. Right. Remember the root locus, right? Root locus, the closed loop poles moves from the open loop poles to the open loop zeros as I increase the gain. The parameter I'm choosing. Right. So by being able to place these two open loop zeros, I can control the movement of closed loop poles as I increase gains. What might the pole at the origin do for me? Think about our system types. What defines the type of a system?
Number of
pure integrators. Okay. So do we have a pure integrator here? Yeah, we would. Right. So what this is going to do is help me deal with steady state error. That's what we looked at for those different system types, right? What's their steady state error to different kinds of inputs. So just from this, we can control kind of the closed loop pole location, but then we also have that pole at the origin that couldn't give us, to pick things the right way, can get rid of steady state error. And in fact, that as we'll see, that is effectively the function of the integral gain. Its primary function is to get rid of steady state error. Okay. So we also could, and I'll kind of do this just for completeness to match where the book went with this. You also could look at this in a way where we're going to factor out, there's a few ways you'll see this done. Let me match the way the book does it. Not really well aligned, is it? Let's fix that. So you could see it written that way. Where A and B are just those things. And then what that would allow you to do and then you could solve by just factoring that quadratic equation for your two zeros. And we could immediately see what we can change to move those zeros around. And depending on what you pick here, there might be complex conjugates. Okay. So, in that case, question comes out. We're saying, hey, we get to move these zeros around. That's going to affect the closed loop poles of our system, which, as we know, affects the closed loop response. So the question then becomes, well, how do I choose those things? How do I choose Kp, Ki, and Kd? Any ideas? Kind of in control system jargon, if you will. We're going to speak control system language. Our real question we're asking right now is, well, how do we choose these gains? Any ideas? Any idea at all? None? No idea. Okay. Fair enough. Trial and error is one way. And you'll see that, perhaps surprisingly, at least to a controls engineer, that this is actually still used a lot. Probably places I visited that do control stuff, and some of them are actually doing it really well. Kind of are just tweaking knobs until they get a response they want, and then, okay, that's good enough. Which is a little bit scary, actually. So trial and error, and there are kind of heuristics-based trial and error methods, right? So I'm kind of including them there, where it's not a really an analytical method, but kind of rules of thumb that people have developed over the year. You'll also hear this called manual tuning. Which is kind of a nice way to say I just tweaked some knobs until I got something close to what I want and didn't touch it, and then I don't touch it anymore. And well, actually, we will walk through one of these, because even though I'm kind of bashing this trial and error as an end-all be-all, I think you shouldn't get to your final solution that way. It can help you get to the neighborhood of a good solution. Initial guess, and then you can optimize from there. Right? So having some idea about these manual tuning methods is useful. I just think it's a little crazy to stop there. Right. We have so much better tools available. Okay. So let's maybe take a look at this manual tuning method. But before we talk about tuning, let's talk about the effects of each of these gains. Because if we're going to try to figure out how to manually tune it, we need to know or have some idea about how the response might change as we increase KP and hold everything else constant, or increase KD holding everything else constant. Okay, so let's think back to our first day of class. We had a system. If you remember our example for that day, box on wheels, and what we were trying to do is to make the position of my box on the wheels match some desired position XD. Right. And we said, well, hey, we actually have what this is really representing. Was this original system. And I posed to you at that point in time, we kind of talked through it, and I think got there as a group, that it might be nice to do something proportional to this difference, and then maybe some term that's proportional to the rate of change of that difference. And, well, this looks just like a force from a spring. Right? There's a stretchiness on the spring and the rate of change in my damper. Right? So a mass under PD control is equivalent to this system. That's kind of what we talked about that first day. Right? Well, if you look at this, there's the kind of form of our PD controller. We just had it over there. Okay, so let's work from here and try to develop some intuition about what changing these gains might do for us. Okay, so if we're looking at this mass under PD control, what's its natural frequency? What's the natural frequency of this closed loop system? Do we need to write the equation of motion first? Let's do the equation of motion. See if that'll help you guys wake up. Forces. All right, we have a force from the spring.
The vertical ones cancel out.
That's right. We have a force from the damper. Vertical ones cancel out. We're saying there's no motion that way anyway, so they all cancel. So okay, what's this force from a spring? What's Mr. Hook say about a force from a spring? Proportional to the displacement from its equilibrium length. What about the force from a damper? Linear viscous damper.
Proportional to the rate of change.
Proportional to the rate of change of its length. Okay. So what's the length of our damper in this case, or spring in this case? Okay, and then the damper, there's our equation of motion. All All right, so we can collect terms if we want. Divide by M. Okay, what's our natural frequency?
K over M, right?
Close, there you go. Right, in that form, and we see omega n okay, so we have a natural frequency from this guy that we can basically tweak by changing our proportional gain. And we have that's actually KD in this case, right? C was KD all the way around, so sorry I didn't. Right. For that virtual spring and damper. Right. So if you don't want to change your notes in our derivation, that's just true. And just constants. P KD KD okay, and we can change our damping by changing KD as well. All right. So that makes sense. If we want to change the spring, the natural frequency of a system that's just a mechanical system, we change the spring. Right. From a purely, if this was purely mechanical, we want to change the damper ratio, we change the value of the damper. So same thing for this closed loop form of the system. If you want to change the natural frequency, we change the proportional control, because that acts like a spring. Want to change the damping, we change KD, because it acts like a damper. Okay? So all right, so back to the original question. What's the effect of changing these gains? What happens if I increase KP? Natural frequency goes up. What does that mean for rise time, everything else held fixed? These goes down, right. So I have a faster rise time. Slower settling time, maybe. Hang on to that one. What else? Do we know anything about overshoot as I increase the natural frequency? Everything else held fixed. Yeah, so for I fix some value of KD and I increase KP, I'm going to have more overshoot of that system from some command. And got a good feel for that from just the smash spring damper analysis. Right. So what happens then if I hold KP fix and increase KD? What happens to overshoot? It goes down. Okay. What about settling time? As I increase KD? It's going to go down as well. Right. My response is damped now, more highly damped. It's going to damp out faster. It's going to settle faster. Can we say anything about steady state error as we increase KP or KD?
You can say that you have a lower steady state error if you increase the damper.
I agree with you all up until the last word. So if I'm not going to increase the damping, what can I increase? Everything else I'll fix. Yeah, so if I increase the spring constant, I actually end up with less steady state error. So I think to wrap your head around that one, just imagine this spring is infinitely soft. and I gave a step input, I have steady state error. Now imagine the spring's harder and I push on it. I have no steady state error. My spring's going to get me to where I want to go now. So increasing that gain reduces steady state error. Yeah.
So that increases the frequency.
Yeah.
So increasing the frequency lowers the error.
Lowers overshoot for a given value of damping.
But if the spring is super stiff, you're just going to slam into your equilibrium position.
Well, yeah, if this is infinitely stiff, then X always equals XD. You don't have any steady state error. Right? If your spring, if KP is infinitely high, right. This force, right?
So the spring
no matter how small that is, this guy gets infinitely large. So X always equals XD.
So the spring is basically like a solid shaft.
If KP gets infinitely large, yeah. Right. The stiffer that spring gets, the more force I'm applying to M to make XD and X match, the lower my steady state error would be. We can also look from this, maybe another way to wrap our heads around it, rather than hopefully getting some intuitive understanding of what happens. What's that equation? Do you remember? You got that? So if we said, kind of everything held fixed, we increase kd, we increase kd, we increases zeta for our damping ratio of our system, what does it mean for overshoot?
Goes down.
Right, so kind of intuition is confirmed by looking at those second order approximations. What about settling time? What's the approximate form of that? Fine, it's approximately that for a second order system. Okay, well,
it takes longer to settle. If we increase KD,
so it's faster. The denominator is getting bigger. The number gets smaller. What about if we've increased KP? Let me okay. So I just wrote out what our form for zeta. And that term actually drops out. So does KP have any effect on settling time?
No.
Does it? All right. Okay. So KD does. We get a larger KD, settling time goes down. Increasing KP doesn't have any effect on settling time. All right. And what we'll see is that maps out, basically. So as we increase KP, we said the percent overshoot goes up. We said there's no effect on settling time. We said steady state error goes down. As we increase KD, percent overshoot went down. Settling time goes down. And steady state air, let's say the damping doesn't have any effect on steady state air. The KI, the integral gain, is a little bit harder to reason against. Let's try to talk through that one a little bit. Well, we talked through this one right already. So that integral gain adds an integrator to your transfer function. So that means that the steady state error actually goes to zero. And we'll see, in terms of overshoot, it kind of acts like a proportional gain. And actually can increase settling time as well. Okay. Let's sketch up a response and try to figure out that guy. All right. So let's see, I can erase this. We'll sketch it right here. So if I have some step input. So that's my input for this system. So we can go ahead and draw it solid. I'll use colors. Input. And let's have a response. Let's see. It looks like that for right now. All right. So what part of this is are the different gains acting on, right? So in this case, right away, we see that we have some error at time zero between the actual position and desired position of the system, or desired state of the system. So right away, we're going to have some part from our proportional controller, right? You see that? So here's my response. In this case, my proportional controller should be generating something proportional to that at time zero, kp times that error. Right? And we have this actually huge change there. This is another issue we'll get into when we actually get ready to do this on the system. So at exactly at time zero, we have this huge spike in the derivative term because xd is infinity. Right? Our input there is infinity. So we have actually infinite error in the derivative at time zero as well. Which, as you might expect, leads to problems if you don't take care of it. Right. But what about the integral term? What's he doing? Well, let's plot maybe right underneath this. Let's see. It's going to be. I'm just going to call that state and then error, because the state could be position, it could be velocity, whatever I'm trying to control. It doesn't really matter. So we have input minus response. So we have some spike. Oops, let's line it up. Spike and error that's going down until here. And then we have that. So our error signal looks something like that, right? All I'm attempting to do here on the fly is subtract the step, the blue thing from the step. We got some error there. So the proportional term is just kp times this. The derivative term is kp times the derivative of that curve. Right? Well, what's the integral term then? Yeah, it's kp times the integral of that. So what happens is you have, at each time step, you're acting on the area under that curve between time zero and that time step. Yeah, negative error. Yeah, so that just changes whether you're pushing or pulling is the one way to think about it. Right. So at every time here, I'm acting proportional to the area under the curve between zero and where I'm at right now. So if I'm out here. At time t, my integral term is ki times this integral between 0 and that time. Yeah?
And does the, where it crosses the x-axis of the error, is that f of t?
No, so that's here, right? So there I have 0 error. So that's why I kind of tried to draw this little line down to get it to line up. Straight line here? Yeah, because at time 0, I go from having no error.
The one after it.
Here? This blue one?
That connects the peak to the axis.
Connects this red one?
Slightly curved.
This guy?
That
no, that's curved. That's this minus the blue thing.
Okay. When you said proportional, I thought that meant it was
no.
Straight.
No, we have r minus y. Right, our r here is white. Right, so white's 1, blue is 0, error is 1. Yeah, you said it needed to be flipped, right?
No. I said you kind of think of the red curve being the blue curve flipped.
Yeah, I mean, it is input. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So you guys follow what I'm kind of saying about the integral term. I think the proportional and derivative are kind of easy to intuitively understand, I'm trying to help you get to the understanding of the integral term. That making some sense? Yes? No? All right. So this is, I don't tell you guys things to memorize often. Memorize this, understand this table. All right. And hopefully you'll just understand it from what we just talked through, but if you have to memorize it, memorize it. All right. All right, so manual tuning is bad. Don't rely on just manual tuning, but let's talk about it. It can be a good way to get a starting point. Okay, so let's talk through, we're going to talk through the procedure, kind of the book talks through. It is a common kind of rule of thumb based approach to getting some in the ballpark of some gains that might work. All right, so step one, basically we're going to set derivative gain to 0 and the integral gain to 0. So we're going to have just the proportional controller to start out with. Okay. We're going to increase Kp until the system is almost unstable. How do you know when you're getting to be almost unstable?
Closer to the real axis.
closer to the real axis, what does that mean for the response? You're all bouncing around a little bit. I think you're on the right track. WD, omega D, the damped natural frequency. Well, so if my natural frequency matches the damped natural frequency, what does that tell me about the damping itself? Zero. So really what we're looking for is the response is undamped. Or very, very lightly damped. That's when you know you're getting close to it going unstable. Okay? You guys seen a problem with this already? Do we want to push our system to do this generally? Probably not. All right. So for some systems, this might be okay, but you're kind of flirting with some bad things if you're getting close to being unstable. So step three, once you have that point, now we go and say, hey, well, decrease KP from that value. So what you're doing with step two is kind of finding the upper bound on the gain. And then there's kind of heuristic message, hey, well, now decrease it increase KP now from that maximum value that you found until the response is decayed or decays by kind of one quarter in one cycle. So we can look at an oscillatory response now. So that's A we want. In one cycle of oscillation to decay by one quarter. And the rule of thumb here is a good place to start is to take the KP you found in step two and half it. And then start moving it around until you get some response that looks like this, where in one cycle you've decayed to a quarter of your peak. And then step four, which I thought was actually kind of funny, because the book basically just says that and doesn't explain really how you want to do that. Okay, so there's a heuristic method, right? And what's kind of implied is once you pick KP, now it's easier to tweak KD and KI, which it generally is actually. All right, so if I found a KP to kind of start with, right, and I fix that, how do I... what are some ways I could choose KD and KI?
Depends on if it overshoots a problem.
Depends on if it overshoots a problem, sure. So I could look at my response, right? So I have a KP, and if I've gone through step three, my response looks like this blue thing. Right? So if overshoots a problem, what do I need to do? If overshoot is a problem.
Increase your KD.
Yeah. So if overshoot's a problem, if I want a response that has less overshoot, I know, hey, I need to bump up KD a little bit. All right. If settling time is the issue, if I want this to damp out quicker, which is very much related, as you saw, what do I need to change? Yeah, bump up KD a bit. All right, so that's going to take care of overshoot and settling time. Okay. But what if, you know, so we didn't say what set point I was oscillating about. What if my desired set point was actually that line, not the one I was oscillating about? What do I need to do then?
Change your KI.
Change KI, right? So if I increase KI,
right,
now I'm going to start reducing the steady state error. But what's going to happen if you increase the KI is now my overshoot and settling time are both going to get longer. Which means I probably need to change to KD. Whole lot of KI and KD. Hold on to that thought. We'll see why that can be an issue. It's actually going to drive you to instability in general. So we can look at just this table and start kind of tweaking based on that table kind of heuristics. Where do we want the response to move towards? Some desired response. We also can look at these and fix our KP is fixed, and set KI, leave KI to be zero, and now I have one parameter in my transfer function that I can change. Well, what tells us how to choose a good parameter? If we have one that's varying, what tool do we have already? I have one parameter transfer function that I can, yeah, the root locus, right? So if I fix KP based on this part three here, I can say, well, make KI to be zero for now. My transfer function is going to only have one parameter that's changing, KD. That's exactly what a root locus does for you, is plot out how the closed loop poles change as some parameter is tweaked. So you can do a root locus analysis for just KD. Get to some poles, and okay, well, that's still not quite good enough. Fix KD to that value. KP stays what it needs to be. Now I can let KI be non-zero and do the root locus for that guy. So it's kind of sequential design process.
Well, if you have like an error that's allowable, can you pick a KI that gets you to that allowable error and then pick a KD from there?
Yeah, you could do it just the opposite of what I said, right? The order. So you could do the KI first. But the point is that you could fix, leave one of these guys to zero, right? So you have one parameter left to you can tweak. Well, that's exactly what a root locus shows, is what's the effect of tweaking that parameter on the closed loop poles. And as you hopefully know by now, the location of those closed loop poles is what dictate the response.
So does that mean you always need to have more KD than you have KI?
No, not necessarily. The actual values for these guys really depend on what system you're trying to control and what kind of response you want. So there's not, we can't generally say that KI is always order of magnitude larger than KD or anything like that. It really depends on what.
Just that you would have to increase KD more than
you would have to increase KI? Not necessarily. Okay. So I'm going to say one way here. KD. That value. So set KI to leave KI zero. Now let KD vary. Do your root locus. Find a value for KD. So KD is now constant. I can value vary KI if I need to. All right, so you kind of have a sequential thing there. And you might have to cycle. I change KI, it's going to increase my overshoot. I might have to go back, fix it at that value, go back, now that it's non-zero and has some value, and tweak KD some more. So you have kind of dueling root loci, trying to find some optimal value with this manual tuning method, at least. Okay. Questions so far? Keep trudging along then. So I'm going to present another kind of family of methods that are commonly used. These are Ziegler-Nichols. And these are still a little bit heuristically based, but are that those heuristics are actually based in real kind of theoretical responses as well. So we're a step above kind of manual tuning. There's a formalized method here to follow with the Ziegler-Nichols. This method is named after two guys that first proposed these methods in 1942, so they're not new. They do also assume that the system you're trying to tune the gains for has a certain form. And we'll talk about that when we get there. There's kind of two of these methods that exist. And we'll talk about that, the form that at least one of them expects in that case. So your book has one. They call the closed loop. I'm going to put Z in for Ziegler-Nichols. I don't have to write it out every time. Closed loop, Ziegler-Nichols. You'll quite often see this called the second method of Ziegler-Nichols. Okay. We're going to do it first, though. Okay. So the process here you want to set up your closed-loop control system, so get everything in place, either simulation, and actually these can be done purely experimentally, which is one of the big benefits of this method. Set up your closed-loop system so that you can give it a step response, or step input, and look at its response. And like before, and kind of what that's based in, is I'm going to increase my proportional gain until it's almost unstable. System's almost unstable. So I have really lightly damped or undamped oscillations. Okay. At this point, defines a parameter that Ziegler-Nichols called the ultimate gain. Not to be confused with the ultimate warrior. For you old school wrestling fans. The ultimate gain, KU. And you have these lightly damped or undamped oscillations. They're also going to have a period associated with them. So we're going to define a period as well. Parameter PU defines the ultimate period. So I have the system, I can give it a step input, and I keep tweaking up KP until it all, I give it this, when I give it the input, it oscillates forever. Not growing, hopefully not growing or shrinking, much as we can. We get that period of oscillation, how long does it take to do one cycle? That's defining this ultimate period, PU. Then from there, I have everything I need to pick the gains for my controller based on just those two parameters alone. All right. And we'll sketch up the table. Quick, so if you look at table 7.5 in your book, I'm going to at least sketch it out a little bit. So given KU and KP, if I have a proportional controller, so D. If I have a proportional integral controller, 0.45 Ku and 0.5 So in the table, there's actually a T. It is this P. So if you look at the table in the book, he has TU everywhere. There should be a PU.
Are there zeros for the?
Well, just a proportional controller. I don't have an integral in right. So yeah, there are zeros where they're not defined, really. Yep. So this seems pretty simple, and it actually works fairly well. Right? So I have this system. If I'm able to get a get it set up for a closed loop step response, right? Keep bumping up KP, figure out what these two parameters are, and then these give me some gains. And usually these are going to give you a starting place for some gains. Right? There's still some tuning that will be necessary. Right? But it's a pretty good heuristic. This one is used a lot. A huge number of the kind of automated PID tuning loops you'll find in kind of expensive motor drives, industrial motor drives, PLCs. I think the automated PID controlling tuner in MATLAB actually uses this as well. Effectively do this behind the scenes. Do this or the one we're getting ready to talk about. But first, PD, Ziegler and Nichols didn't define what the gains should be for a PD controller, given their method. Okay. And part of that's because I think they came from the process control world. So PD control is really uncommon there. You might also see this written this way. So the actual way that I learned this is to rewrite the transfer function of the. So we wrote. You'll see that rewritten like this sometimes. Excuse me. So I'm just factoring out the KP out front of everything. And then we define a couple of new terms. That way. So we talked about the kind of these automated tuners and things like that. Quite often, they're using this form. So you're actually giving these kind of time constants rather than a direct integral or derivative gain. And basically, you look at this form. I want to just mention this so you're aware that you'll see that alternative form of this controller. And you look, if you try to look up Ziegler-Nichols online, for example, most most of the tables you'll find online define not KP, KI, KD in the table, but KP, TI, TD in this table. So there is one of those tables in the notes for you, but pretty much anyone you look up online will define it that way. So I just wanted you guys to see where that, what those things actually represented. Okay. Questions about that method? Is there any problems with it? Set in place, so yeah, it's you know, in some sense, it's intended to give you, hey, these are the gains you need for your system if you want a good, quote-unquote, good response. But that, yeah, that's assuming that you agree with Ziegler and Nichols what constitutes a good response. Right, and that might vary depending on your system. Right, so yeah, it does give you some set of fixed gains. You'll see this quite often used to give me initial guess for what the good gains are, and then tweaking further from there using some methods we'll talk about pretty soon. All right. Other problems maybe with this? So similar to our manual tuning method, I have to bring it almost to instability. Right. So that can be a little bit dicey. Things start really vibrating back and forth, getting close to being unstable. Depending on what your system is, you might not want to do that. No, it's different. Yeah. So what we're looking for, right, if we're getting close to almost unstable, we want some essentially undamped oscillatory response. That's kind of what we mean by almost unstable. What happens if I keep, or do you think there exists a system where I can keep cranking up KP, keep cranking up KP, keep cranking up KP, and it never oscillates? We never have sustained oscillation. Yeah, short answer is yeah. Right. So this method, and this one as well, requires your plant to be one that can be oscillatory, given a PID controller. And you're not guaranteed that to be the case. Okay. So we've got time for the other, which is actually the first method of Ziegler-Nichols, which your book calls so that was closed loop. Hold on, the second method, this is open loop. Or the first method. So this is really, this one is even more kind of a so it's really intended for first order systems. What does that mean? How many poles will we have for a first order system? Where are we at? It should be N. Is that N? No. Ziegler-Nichols, sorry. I'm being lazy not writing out Ziegler-Nichols, sorry. And they actually further specify, really intended for first order systems with a transport delay. And really all you need to understand about a transport delay is the system does nothing for a certain period of time. I tell the system, hey, you move, and it sits there for a little while and then starts moving. Like, does nothing for a short amount of time. So there's a pure time delay between when I tell the system to do something and when it starts reacting. Not super common in mechanical systems, but does show up in process control stuff. Right? I start tweaking the parameters on my process, and there's some finite time before things actually start changing in the response. You don't want that usually. It's just a property of the physical setup of your system. Okay, so the first step here take the controller that you're trying to tune completely out of the loop. So hence the name, the open loop Ziegler-Nichols. We want a pure open loop response. Okay. Now we want to issue a step command to that open loop system. And if it is a system that has a transfer function like this one, you'll get a response. I'm going to draw it up over here. Okay. So we'll call that time zero just to get us away from the axis so we can see what's happening. And we're going to have some time. Delta t. So we give a step response, see our input. Some step response, and we're going to say that is of amplitude m. Okay. So this is my transport delay. I give the step response at time t, and my system does nothing for that amount of time. And then starts moving. So I gave this input, I have this delta t there. So I'm not doing anything yet. All right. We have the time kind of to the here. Defines tau. So from when it actually starts moving to when it gets to its final set point, or steady state point, we have tau. Okay, so when we said the transport delay, that's this delta t. What we want to do is look at the slope of the inflection point of this response. So we want to look at the inflection point of that curve and draw the slope. At that point. Okay. And the slope we're going to call R. Slope at response inflection point. So if I find the reflection point of response, draw that slope, it has slope R. And I ran out of space for inflection. And then once you find those things, once you found your transport delay, tau, and R, and you know M from because that's the input you got to give the thing, now you have a set of gains for this system. So this is a second method. So the first method of Ziegler-Nichols, again, intended for these kind of first-order systems that have a transport delay. Take the controller out of the loop, give it a step command. Okay. You'll know the amplitude of the step command because you get to give it. Figure out what delta t is. Figure out what r is. And then given those two things, you have at least a first starting point for your PID controller gains for the system. Okay, see any problems with this method? Well, I don't think we rarely ever want a transport delay, but the system has a transport delay. That's not something we have control over.
Okay, so you're
Well, again, this is intended for systems that match that form.
So that's the problem.
That's your problem, right? We might not have a system of this form, right? But like so much we kind of do in this controls land, if our system is close to that form, this is still going to get you a good first guess for gains.
You're also taking a response of a non-feedback loop, right?
Yeah.
Which, given a controller, that response might change somewhat, huh?
Well, basically what Ziegler and Nichols have done, and you can look at their paper if you want, is to take this response, and this still gives me enough information to pick the gains for the closed loop system. For this type of approximate transfer function, physical or plant that I'm trying to control. Right. So really this is telling me kind of stuff about the plant. So this is really kind of helping me get the model of the plant. And then given that model with those parameters, these are quote unquote optimal gains according to Ziegler and Nichols. But you're all right. I mean, the system has to be something like this. Right? In practice, it still works okay for second order systems as long as they're kind of slow and not oscillatory. Right? So if you have a physical system that's kind of highly damped and sluggish, if you will, then this method would still work for you. Or get you in the ballpark for those gains, and then you can tweak further once you get the first shot at it. I think, you know, certainly these are not necessarily intended to be the gain you use, right? They're going to do okay if you do that, better than if you just kind of tweak it by hand. But quite often, in reality, you're going to need some tuning away from these as well, based on what kind of response you really want. That can be helpful, and that gives you more resolution to actually get what you want. But it also opens up more things to be tweaked. Right? So if you have more parameters, more available space to tweak over, that's not always helpful. Questions? Sorry. I see that. I noticed.
Yeah, sorry.
So that's a PID controller. We'll work on Thursday. A couple examples of how to pick stuff out. We'll have basically a lab doing this on some hardware, figuring out some gains for an actual system. All right. See you guys Thursday.